God, why am I so horny for Glenn?
Nearly Beloved, we're here tonight to talk about the, fourth and fifth episode that went for approximately 3 years of Bachi in Paradise Australia 2020. I was a young woman at the start and I am the crone I am today at the end. My name's Lucy May. I'm your host for these proceedings and my fantabulous co-host is Karen Pickering.
Bulla, I guess.
We're recording this on Wurundjeri and Wadawurrung land. Let's get into it. Karen, I'm concerned about this season.
Yeah.
And the fact that they gave us a 2-hour episode. Like, I don't even think maths forced us to sit through that.
Yeah, they made us sit for 2 hours to eliminate Jake and a man who literally just arrived 5 minutes ago.
Yeah.
It was like the biggest anticlimax ever.
Yeah. A mutual friend of ours messaged me to say, oh, shit, one of the guys who's coming in, I used to work with him many years ago in a retail department store environment. Her assessment of him was, he was fine. And like, that's pretty much what the problem with this scene is.
Damned with faint praise.
Yeah. He said he was perfectly nice.
Well, I guess that's better than he was a huge arsehole.
True. And I won't reveal whomst as pedestrian likes to say.
You won't attach the description fine to any young man on the show.
Karen, before we launch into it, into the last two episodes of Bachi in Paradise.
The last three and a half stolen hours of my life.
Yeah. Yes. But before we get into that, I just have a question for you.
I've been waiting for a question from you.
Good. Would you rather refer to every dinner for the rest of your life as a Bulla banquet? Or
whatever the second one is, I pick it.
Oh, no, really?
Okay, no, come on, go.
Or refer to yourself as a clean skin 3 times a week for the rest of your life. Karen's making a face.
Look, all I'll say is let's get this over with so that I can have my Bulla banquet.
I knew it. I cringed every time and, yeah, I just didn't like it. I think they need to stop with the gimmick.
Well, like Tim's reaction was really telling that he was just like, you know, they don't even go here. You know, like he was like put out that they were not from the Bachiverse. And there was a kind of little ripple through the group of like, oh, they're normals. They're not like.
Yeah, they're civilians.
Yeah, they're not celebrities like us, which it'll be. It'll be great for us to unpack this a bit more as our season goes on, like how celebrity operates in the world of Bachelor in Paradise, or the Bachiverse in general. But yeah, it was on a number of levels a fairly grotesque display.
Yeah, I wish they'd let it go, but they seem to be holding on to it. So we'll see. Maybe they'll pan away from it, like how in the first season of Sex and the City they kept breaking the fourth wall and talking to the camera, and then they just stopped doing it.
And then they realized this is garbage.
And they never did it again. Side note, watch Clem Ford's stories about what a garbage human Carrie is, because, wow, yeah, she really was a garbage human. Speaking of garbage humans.
Yeah. Great segue.
Yeah. Thank you. Yeah, Kieran and Renee.
Speaking of Sex in the City, how about Sex on an Island? Kieran and Renee.
Except they are no more. They were.
Mm.
I really like Renee and I felt really bad from her and went bad for her. And when I looked up the timeline, this was apparently something like 2 months after, or a few weeks after they'd broken up. So the timing might have been a little unhealthy.
The circus, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
And I mean, obvious. So if we kind of vague, broadly say that the first episode that we watched this week was about Renee / Kieran, and the second episode that we watched this week was about Alicia / three
Greg
men. Gleg.
Yes.
That's what I heretofore refer to him as. The Renee episode was like a kind of protracted, like, wisdom tooth extraction. It was like there was nothing enjoyable about it. The whole kind of build up and suspense and even the payoff was sort of really, it was like boring and then horrible at the same time. There was nothing kind of like entertaining or you know, fizzy about it. You know, yeah. It was like flat champagne.
I wanted to grab everyone there and just force them to drink a liter of water and take a Panadol and then go to bed. And then I would have put a big tub of sunscreen right next to their bed.
Yes. They need.
Why are they all so fried?
Strict slip, slop, slap policy at this resort.
It's really horrifying watching. Seeing these, especially these white guys, just become redder and redder and redder. And I know exactly that feeling because, as someone who can get sunburnt in a dark room inside, that overcast sky, it's deceptive.
Yeah.
If you're in somewhere like Fiji and there's an overcast sky, you better be putting on a hat and putting on some sunscreen because otherwise you're going to end up like Connor's neck and Greg's entire body.
They looked like British backpackers, like who arrived in Melbourne to overcast skies and 15, and like it's swimming weather on Secunda Beach.
And yeah.
Then they end up like crispy, shiny red lobsters. Yeah.
On Christmas Day, they're just out there getting absolutely fried because if you grow up with ozone layer, you don't know what it's like.
I mean, even the show Channel 10 has subtly put out these like this messaging saying we promised that we did provide them with sunscreen. Like,
oh really?
Yeah, like I read one of the articles that you sent me. It was like we're not abusing them. They are on limited amounts of alcohol, and they're only allowed to have a certain number of drinks. And we provide them all with sunscreen and encourage them to use it.
Oh, I missed the sunscreen. The bit that I remembered from that was that they have to say explicitly on camera, "I give consent" when they're having sex, which is good.
Yeah, I mean, obviously, from the point of view of Channel 10, that's about lawsuits and not healthy consent. But yeah, no, it's good.
Better than not.
Yeah. You know, we already knew they get paid peanuts.
Yeah.
But that they
a few hundred dollars a day.
Yeah. That they're allowed to have food they can order food 24/7. They're only allowed to have two drinks per hour.
Yeah. And they have to have eaten breakfast.
Yeah. And they're not allowed to order a shot of spirit unless it's with a mixer. Like, I thought that's kind of obviously why nobody is absolutely shammered.
Yeah. They all seemed pretty smashed at that bull banquet.
Yeah, they're just low-level pissed all the time.
Yeah. And also, can they stop drinking red wine? I was getting such an itchy, you know, hot face and bad sleep watching them in the heat drinking red wine.
It's a wintertime drink, guys.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah. It's also not a great thing to drink when you're gonna like when you're trying to like look cute and pass on with people.
Oh yeah. Oh yes. When you have the red wine lips at the party.
Red wine like wings outside of and the teeth.
This is all red. Yeah, it's not the hottest, that's for sure.
Which is kind of why I liked seeing people do it. I was go nuts.
Okay. Well, should we go back to Renee's episode?
Right. So Renee
arrived. There was build
Renee
up.
Definitely shouldn't be there, like for a start, from like a duty of care perspective, and you didn't understand why she would do it.
Yeah.
They obviously paid her a lot more than $100 a day.
You'd bloody hope so. I really, really hope so.
Well, given they built a whole storyline around her, you know.
So there was all this whispering. People have been in each other's DMs apparently. Something, this is all capitals like a title, something happened in Bali.
Mm.
We don't know, you know, we've dug into the timeline a little bit since then. It's all pretty easily available, but it's all a bit drab, I suppose.
You don't have to do like, you know, SVU level detective work to see that it's like it's been a bad breakup. He's behaved really poorly. She's really shattered. I know a great idea. Why don't they go on a reality dating show together?
Yeah. Like, well, when they're pretty sure but not 100% sure that the other one's going to be there, seemingly.
Yeah, that's what I mean. It's like, you know, and it seems like within the Bachiverse of, you know, Renee is friends with Cass and she's friends with Jess and she's friends with this person, she's friends with that person. It's like, well, obviously friendship as a word is being used loosely.
Like, yes, it doesn't mean what it used to mean. It's, well, you know, language isn't static.
It's like we were on a season together.
Yeah. Yes. We were in each other's vicinity. Apparently sharing apparently in the mansion, I think Abby said this recently, all the women are in this one big room with all these bunk beds.
Yes.
Yeah, so she was like, the breweries were great.
Because people were saying, oh God, how festy is the paradise hostel resort? Vibe. And she was like, it was pretty good compared to the mansion. Can we just stop and say how amazing it is to have Abby just spilling all this tea all over us?
Loving it. Really loving it.
Not just like cool tidbits like that, but her Insta stories responding to the bullying videos.
Yeah, of Cass and Mary really slagging her off.
We're like, they should show that stuff in school. It's like a really amazing kind of case study of bullying, of gaslighting, of of emotional abuse, of slut shaming, all of the, it'd be really interesting to show that to teenagers and be like, what has Abby done wrong? Let's kind of really unpack it. Like she said in her story, she's like, oh, I went on holiday and I went swimming in the pool in a bikini.
Yeah.
Because they were like shitting on her for like, oh, there she is in her bikini trying to attract men. And it was like, everyone here is wearing a bikini. Like it was a really great mirror to hold up to not just this dating reality show and not just our popular culture, but like it was a really great mirror to hold up to like gender relations and social behavior, but also like cishet straight dating world.
Yeah.
Like how ugly it is when women turn on other women in competition for men.
And how much the hands of the producers and editors would have had to have played a heavy role in that. When you look at Alicia, so we'll get into her a bit later because, spoiler, I love her. But if you – the second episode of this week when she came in, she's saying, I really like Greg. We're just going to call him Greg now.
I'm going to call him Gleg.
Gleg, all right. Greg. I'm going to go for Greg because I think it's just simple and appropriate. She was saying, I'm really into him. There's three guys. They're really attractive. I'm really into this. I'm super enjoying all of this. And I'm going to like hook up with someone and find someone. And then there was that really painful footage of Mary, I think it was Mary, Jess and Cass, quote unquote, twerking. I don't think we can really use the word because it was not.
Yeah. They were like learning from Jess. They were learning like some version of twerking, aka how to dance.
Yeah.
How to dance with their butts.
Yeah, how to shake their butts around anyway. Yeah. I saw someone point out that something like Alicia saying all of that, and that if that had been Abby, she would have just been absolutely ripped apart. And she would have gotten all of the talking heads talking about what a disgusting slag she is. She would have gotten the like temptress music. It's just,
or
it
she
is
would have gotten the like loser edit of like the music loser, would have been like bam bam, like everyone looking at her like ugh. I want to just give a shout out because the person who said that, the commentator who made that observation, is Lucinda, who is a listener of the podcast. Kath's beautiful daughter, who I think is the kids are all right. The future is in good hands because there are these like Gen Z, etc.
Yes.
Cool bitches coming through who just take no shit and who look at it, and they can just see exactly what's happening. And so she's in high school and she's like, that's bullshit. Like if what Abby was crucified for was exactly what Alicia did, which was come in and say, I like that guy and so I'm going to pursue him and I look hot and I'm going to like strip down to a bikini and let him rub cream all over me, which, P.S. was a great scene. But if Abby had been that person, we would not hear the end of it.
Nah, it wouldn't have been anything like that.
It wouldn't have been framed as like an innocent,
wholesome attraction.
Yeah. A justifiable, legitimate, connecting of two people.
Yeah.
Which, you know, it was really good and also difficult to see Abby crying and talking in her stories about how she felt, you know, such a release and so validated by seeing this repeat, like the repeated vicious cycle of abuse in a way that now the public can see what's happening. Yeah. And so she felt very seen and validated, and it was really emotional. I felt really, really emotional watching that, but really happy for her.
Yeah. I love Alicia because she seems smart and funny and fun. And also because I take my hat off to her in that Alicia being attracted to Greg instantly made him 1,000 times more interested.
She sprinkled like her. I wrote in my notes, Alicia must be a very powerful witch because she's made us love Greg.
Yes, right.
She sprinkled her pixie dust on him.
She did. She smothered him in that good stuff. And I all of a sudden just, wait a minute, that Greg guy's not bad. Except actually, to be fair, it was the episode before that when he told Tim, shut the fuck up. I was like, wait a minute, where did this guy come from?
Can we just go back to Alicia quickly? Because I just felt like she was such good talent. She was such good TV talent.
Yeah.
That I felt like, well, anytime she's on the screen, I believe her. I'm listening to her. She's absolutely sparkling. She's charming. She's kind of goofy and sweet, but also just, you know, really glamorous and sexy. She's like everything. Yeah. So we obviously now feel like Glegg has been elevated by her.
Straight up.
And so I'll tell you the things that I noticed about Glegg in this episode that made me really like him.
Yeah.
Is that he seems like an adult.
Yes. Yeah.
Which, you know, our younger listeners might be like, what? Why is that attractive? And we're like old wizened crones going, with our crooked fingers going, one day you'll know what I mean. That when a man behaves like a man and like an adult, it's not only extremely attractive and reassuring and beautiful, but it's rare.
Yeah. Yeah.
In combination with also being, you know, non-threatening and non-authoritarian and, you know, whatever. Yeah. So he seemed like a grown-up. I also liked that he wasn't taking Alicia for granted. He was he could have been like Kieran and been like, well, I know you're going to give me your rose, so whatever.
Yeah.
But he was like, no, I really have to impress her and be proactive and, you know, be honest and open and tell her my feelings with my mouth and my grown-up words.
Yeah. Yeah.
Instead of just assuming that she knows. And I thought that it was really cute and nice that he was trying so hard to impress her.
Yeah, I liked it. The one bit that I lol sobbed at was they're sitting there all dreamy eyed at each other, and Alicia says, "I'd like to have 3 or 4 kids." And I was like,
when she called him Greg instead of Glenn, that was just glossed over and became like she got to set the tone of how that was actually really funny, and he got to smooth it over as just charming and sweet. How is that any different to Abby saying she's a Gemini?
Yeah, which was a joke. And
which was clearly a joke and not an accident and not a little like momentary brain snap.
Yeah.
And yet it got edited as like crickets, you know, and Matt being like, you know.
Yeah.
And so I felt like that was another really telling bit of evidence about how Alicia is getting a very sympathetic edit.
Oh, true.
But I really liked seeing them get together. I thought it seemed genuine.
Yeah.
And, I mean, besides the ridiculous vaudeville theatre of rubbing cream all over each other and then having a banana leaf massage.
Yeah.
Even amongst all that chicanery, it seemed like an authentic kind of first date connection vibe.
Yeah, they definitely were. The oxytocin levels were definitely rising when they kept on looking at each other just that bit too long in each other's eyes, and I was like, woo!
Yeah, and kind of like giggling and And they were both really kind of lit up and excited. Yeah. So I felt like that was actually really nice. And also their pashing was very smutty. And,
yes.
But good, in a good way. You enjoyed that. I was okay, like,
so,
yeah.
So we're one for three. One for three, lots of kissing. You like one out of three. You weren't into Kieran and you weren't into Tim.
No. And I don't like Bulla Banquet, aka Seventh Circle of Hell, where it was like this face off between Renee and Kieran. Let's talk about Tim.
Yes, because that was an absolute disgusting display of childish, man childish, just bullying behavior. And I hated every second of it. And you know what else I fucking hated was people saying to Britt, get your man in line
or put him in line.
It's like she's known him for 3 days. And even if they'd been together for 50 years, it's not her responsibility for him being a dipshit.
Yeah, 1,000%. No, I'm glad I asked you in that way because you let it rip and that's what he deserves. Like he was just so repulsive.
Yeah.
He was kind of like, you know, pissed and kind of jumped up. But by his own admission, like later he was just like, I it was all just, you know, I didn't mean any of it. I was stirring the pot. And, you know, I took it too far. And it's like, what? Okay, that does now make me think that maybe the producers took him aside before the thing and said, can you just say a bunch of really outrageous shit? In which case, you know, he met the brief. But he behaved so poorly that it was really great to see Glenn say, shut the fuck up.
Yes.
It was good. I had a bit of hope seeing Britt sitting there just looking like completely revolted.
Mortified.
I had a bit of hope that she would just go, what was I thinking? But that was – my hopes were dashed later. Yeah. When she, you know, told Tim how what a great guy he is and how it would be so terrible if he left.
Yeah, and reassured him that, you know, she liked him. And I just kept thinking it's a cliche, but that I think it's Maya Angelou that you know, that when someone shows you who they are, believe them.
Believe quote. Them. When they show you, believe them the first time.
The first time.
Yeah, not like the 10th time. Hello, past me, not the 10th time.
Yes, I'm just tapping out a message to me of 13 to 27.
Yeah, he was just an absolute tool. But then, you know, whatever the producer's role was, you know, is its own problem. But I feel like also what we saw was we saw a grown man behave like a sort of 12-year-old boy.
Yeah.
Who'd been on the, you know, Passion Pops or something, just getting up into everyone's business, making up lies, pitting people against each other, egging people on, just, you know, essentially making a complete tit of himself. And then almost immediately after, it's like he throws himself into this huge sulk. I'm leaving. I don't want to be here anymore. And, you know, we'll talk about the whole contact with Jamie later because that was like disturbing as well. But then Britt comes in and has to console him.
Yeah, and like he was the one really, who
that was masterful gaslighting because it was like he was the victim. He was the guy who felt so bad that he would have to, you know, everyone's going to think I'm such a wanker and such a dickhead and I have to leave now because, you know, because I can't show my face. And she's like, no, baby, stay. You're amazing. I was like.
It's like you did act a dickhead and a wanker and you should probably leave.
I was like fucking throwing shit at the TV at that point.
Yeah, I wasn't into it.
So, yeah, we can agree that Tim is. You know,
no,
a complete twat.
Yeah.
He inspired me to start building a really small but hopefully useful glossary of terms for, you know, users of The Bachelor. And I thought, you know, it's sort of like a bit of a public service where I thought I could translate some of the terms that we've come across so far. So, like,
yes, please.
I thought when someone says stir the pot, what it means is act like a giant fuckwit.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. So just in FYI, in future, if anyone is stirring the pot, it just means that. Larrikin, like, oh, I just am a bit of a larrikin. That means wanker.
Yeah.
As well.
Correct.
Yeah. the lads. When you hear the lads, that's a group of wankers. That's like a plural.
The collective now.
Of wankers. Yeah, exactly. The lads.
Yeah. The lads.
The banter. Banter means insults disguised as jokes. and finally, friendship rose. Thanks to Jake, I now can see friendship rose is actually a desperation rose.
Yeah,
or correct. In the case of Cass, a deceit rose. But Cass gave her rose to Naranga.
Yes, she did.
Which was kind of like in the lead up to that, we kind of got the impression that Naranga thought it meant more than what it did.
Yeah.
But she also, kind of was in the bits to camera saying, like, bragging about how she's just got Naranga.
They're stringing him along, really. Yeah.
And, Cass sucks.
Yeah, she's got some extreme Schadenfreude vibes that I really dislike. I think people can be dickheads, but if you actively enjoy other people having a bad time, you're a really bad person. She was after the dinner party when Britt was understandably feeling really upset and embarrassed. Cass didn't say anything along the lines of, it doesn't reflect on you.
Are you okay?
He's being a dickhead. Are you okay? Yeah, exactly. She said, you're not a match. You're not a match. So, and your face. Yeah, did you not pick that up? Yeah, she.
No, I didn't see that. I did.
I mean, because Britt was upset because she likes Tim for whatever reason.
Yeah.
And she was upset not only that he acted in that way and hurt other people, made them upset, but embarrassed her, and it was embarrassing, and then she felt humiliated by it. So, but she was also upset.
Like, come in, like, you know, just yelling in her face, like, Captain fucking obvious, like.
Yeah.
Looks like your boyfriend acted like a real fuckhead tonight. But Cass was like only annoyed because Tim had a go at her. You know, you sort of get the impression that if Tim hadn't got stuck into her, Cass would have been just cackling away. Like she did when Jamie was in like extreme dire straits, she was like, you know, completely delighted.
Yeah, that footage in particular that wasn't aired on the show, but the Bachelor in Paradise social channel shared it of Cass and Mary just really hacking into Abby in their heart. It made me feel really sick as someone who has once been a teenage girl. It just, I didn't, it wasn't good. I noticed that in episodes 3 and 4, the edit that Mary got wasn't as viper, you know, as vicious in her commentary as she had been in the first couple of episodes. It was interesting to me that it was a little bit lighter on that, but then they released that footage. Brittany is just this tragic figure to me who, you know, she gets so close to something and then she just like falls off the cliff into the, you know.
Like her getting food poisoning when she's about to go on her date.
She finally got the date, her third appearance on the franchise. She finally got a date. She is so excited and then with the like full on shundering noises, and apparently the closed captioning was pretty good as well.
Yeah, obviously Brittany was super excited, but I kind of felt like here's this new guy who is not part of this like small community of like Bachiverse survivors who seem to all know each other and hang out together. And he comes in and just at face value goes, she's beautiful, she's fun, she's gorgeous, I like her, I'm going to take her out on a date. And so I felt really excited and happy for her that when you strip away all the, you know, kind of infighting and bitchiness and, you know, she's actually like a real sweetheart. And this guy, whoever this guy is, came in and was like, I can see that. And so for Mary to then pick him, I felt like it was pretty shady.
It was super shady. So who else had Cass picked Naranga at that point? So who else would Mary have chosen? Potentially Jamie.
I guess Jamie, or I guess the other guy who got sent home.
The guy who left?
No, the guy who got sent home. The other guy who's not Connor and not the other
third,
guy.
Yeah, the third loaf of white bread.
Yeah, exactly. They're all the same to me.
Ooh, did you?
Yeah.
Sorry, I just got distracted thinking about the loaves of white bread because there was still pretty much a loaf of white bread, but he came in on the ocean, that Alex guy. What do you think of him?
That was so extra. I loved it. I loved it. And all the women were just like flooding their basements.
Yeah.
At this, like,
including you.
I mean, he's objectively a hottie, but that he was just like, you know, they had him, the show had him in like slow mo coming out of the water. It was James so Bonding hilarious. You know, he's like extremely gorgeous. And so I feel like he's going to reveal himself to be like a giant fuckhead anytime soon.
Yeah, I'm sure.
I have no idea who he is in the world of the Batchyverse, but if Kieran's his best mate, then, you know.
He was in Angie's Seat.
That used to be a good thing.
Oh, no, sad.
Now it's like,
fucking get in the bin.
Yeah.
I had a little bit of a squiz on his Insta, and pretty much the most interesting thing about him that I could find is he's a twin. He's got a twin brother. Mm. He's quite cute too. That's about it, really. It's just a lot of photos of him topless or not topless, full stop.
Well, stay tuned for his twin to swim out of the water next episode.
Yeah, that would actually be really cool. So at the first Buller banquet, I can't say that with a straight voice.
I feel like you should say Buller banquet.
No. At the first MAFS dinner party ripoff, we had the culmination of all of the chattering and foreshadowing of Renee arriving, walking from bright daylight into dark nighttime. Did you notice that people were talking about that?
She
on
was
Twitter.
Walking for like 2 kilometers, walking in heels.
Hours.
Yeah.
Arrived at the banquet, and Kieran did a full, like, his eyes doubled in size when she actually walked in, and he's like, "Oh, great."
His whole reaction to the entire thing was to act like a really petulant, stroppy child.
Baby.
Yeah.
Yeah. That was not good.
The most unattractive he's ever been.
Yeah.
Throwing a prolonged tantrum.
It made me think, I've known a few guys like that who are all laughs until mm-hmm. something doesn't go their way, mm-hmm. and then they just absolutely lose their shit.
And then they spit their dummy.
Yeah. So it was that they asked him they had that same conceit of the box with the questions. They asked him a couple of questions about Renee, and he answered one and then just or two and then spat the dummy.
And and Renee walked off. Fuck this. I'm not fucking doing this.
Earlier in that day as well, he cracked it when he knew that Renee was coming after, I think after Osher had said, or even after they knew that she was there. And the bit that killed me was he went up to his beret and he like angrily washed his feet in the bucket.
No.
He was like, "Well, you know, fuck, I can't do a Manchester accent. Sorry, Sorry." But and then he's like walking up. I'm done. And then he's like, but in the midst of his rage, he's like just dunks his feet in the bucket. Like someone stands in the hut. Like that just killed me. But then at the banquet, he stormed off, and I did actually feel for him because he started crying, which is always probably my stupid
when
lady.
When he was at the bar, he started crying, yeah. And I said to you how fucked up are men that Glegg is just sitting there while he's crying, just going like, this is awkward.
Doing a wan kind of tap on the shoulder.
Doing the Simpsons, like, there. Yeah. But maybe now I'm thinking maybe Glegg just doesn't even like Kieran. So that's why he didn't go, mate, you know, are you all right? But yeah, Kieran's crying. Glegg's going, do you want me to leave or go? What's happening?
Glegg reaches out to him, but like just as his hand's about to touch another man's shoulder in sympathy, the Southern Cross tattoo on his back like lights up and zaps him. Like, oh, I can't do that. And he's like, oh, the hives got me. Sorry.
He just hears like, Australia's sons, let us rejoice. That was scary. Mm. It was scary watching two grown men and one of them start crying. And then in the second, well, not because I don't want to see a grown man crying, but because the the other man just like sat there kind of inanimate and not able to offer even the most cursory of comfort. And then, you know, in the next episode, seeing Jamie just full blown bawl his eyes out and not be offered any sympathy or comfort or care from anyone was truly abysmal.
Jamie,
but yeah, to go back to what you were saying about Kieran, you felt like when he was crying, you were like, okay, well, he's obviously really genuinely affected.
And I think that comes down to what we were talking about last episode, which is people are complex. They're not good or bad. They don't only do good things. They don't only do bad things. And what's good and bad is not clear a lot of the time. So I do think that Kieran is probably all of those things that we always liked about him, like fun, irreverent, you know, not scared of feminine stuff, all of that. And someone who really loved his girlfriend, fucked up and cheated on her, broke her heart, felt really bad, from all accounts, probably continued doing that sort of stuff later, and then ends up feeling really bad on national television and gets really upset.
Yeah. Or if, you know, her version of events seems to be, no, he's crying because I've got a big secret about him that if there's I reveal is going to tarnish his reputation in the eyes of a public that really love him. And so really the you know, it's also equally possible that he's sitting there like he doesn't have any of those feelings of like regret or remorse for treating her badly. He's just panicking because he's about the jig is about to be up.
Yeah, which and the jig was that Renee revealed that they had been together, which I think people knew before he went into the bachelorette house, but that he'd been contacting her the whole time, that he was in the house purportedly, you know, falling for Angie. And then he left the house after his nan died to be with her, and that maybe gave more of the impression that the specific reason he left was his nan dying, when actually maybe it was more like being upset about that, but also just wanting to go and be with Renee, not to be with Angie.
Yeah. And so whether or not they edited it in a tricksy way, but Renee saying to Kieran, you know, I feel like I'm sitting on this secret about you that you left the mansion to be with me. And him saying, well, yeah, I lied about that too, so I'll fucking own that as well. Kind of suggests that even if his nan did die,
I think, apparently,
you know, you've checked, she did. I also want to add here as like a little
asterisk. Which is very sad as well. We're not laughing about that.
It is very sad. But also I taught at university for a long time, and the number of dead nans like that I had to offer my sincerest condolences over. Grandma seemed to mostly die around the end of term.
Yeah.
That aside, the whole of Australia, part of the mythos and mythology of Kieran in the Bachelor Mansion was like the terrible tragedy that his nan died and he had to leave Ange, who he was totally in love with, in order to go and grieve for his nan. And Renee is here to say, like, record scratch. He was in, you know, we were in each other's DMs the whole time he was in the mansion. He clearly wasn't really in love with Angie, and his grandma died, but then I picked him up at the airport and we resumed our relationship immediately. So undercuts the idea that Kieran is this like, you know, really sensitive, beautiful, sweet, loving, respectful,
sincere, I think is one of the things that it
character.
Throws. And it also highlights a couple of things that even at the time when I was assuming that all of that was the case, things that I read, which made me think, even at the time, just briefly, was a couple of interviews in which he talked about Angie's season and about how it was sad that he had to leave. And instead of saying, it's really shit and I wish I could have stayed because I really liked Angie and I wanted to be with her and I was hoping to be with her, he said things like, it was really shit that I had to leave because I thought I would win it. Or, it's really shit that I had to leave because I thought I'd be the last guy at the end. And it's like, that throws even light on it.
Yeah. Yeah. They, honey, they were your red flags.
They were, but I was just.
That you were like, the stars in my eyes are blinding me. So I can't see these extremely bright red flags being waved in front of my face.
Yeah. Me and 87% of the Australian population.
No, it's not. It's not like, yeah, it's not like it was just you. But I mean, I feel like that whole. Again, it's a really good kind of case study of the, I mean, not just like he said, she said stuff, but also like you say, the complexity of things, the fact that these are real human beings, the fact that the timelines of these TV shows are really deceptive as well, because we're watching them. You know, I realized after we recorded last time that Rose Callahan's genius suggestion of having text message voting.
Oh, it's not right. It's
couldn't
not
work
right.
Because they're not there at the time. You know, it's not Big Brother.
Of course.
So you know what I mean? It's like all of it is just this total fantasia. And we know that. Mm. We know that actually most of these people are there for a career boost.
Yeah.
/ a public profile.
Mm.
And yet we kind of get carried away into the, you know, we still were like, but yes, that's true of everyone else, but not Kieran. You know what I mean? Like we kind of still wanted to make, we were all making fun of, what's his name? Carlin.
Yeah, exactly. What's his name?
But we were like, somehow we could, you know, we were like, but Kieran is like not like all those others, you know. He's going, well, it turns out Kieran's exactly like all those others.
Yeah. But I suppose at least he did it with a bit of pizzazz, which was kind of why.
Yes.
But, and I mean, that maybe is why we're seeing Renee, this really hurt, seeing this beautiful young woman completely broken up about holding a secret for this guy who has broken her heart, they're not together anymore. And she kept on saying things like, should I tell the truth or should I protect him? Should I keep carrying this secret around? And I think that that's so illustrative of so many young in particular, but not always just young, but heterosexual relationships with women being these secret keepers.
I think middle-aged women do it. I think old women do it. I think all girls and women do it for boys and men. And it's a really strong part of the social contract and the way that it's
the
gendered.
Reputation.
Yeah, the reputation of boys and men comes first.
No, well, there's that quote. What is it? Women have a past and men have potential.
Yeah. I just think I have a feeling that, you know, that's Renee's value to the show was that she could be brought in to do that.
And are you not expecting to see a whole lot more from her?
I don't know.
Well, I hope that we see more of.
Yeah, she seems cool and smart. And obviously, you know, she's got every right to be there as much as Kieran or Abby or anyone else, you know, to go back and get her payday, but also have a nice holiday.
Well, hopefully only goes up from here. Those racking full body sobs that she was doing, way too familiar from many years ago.
They just looked like the nightclub has just closed and everyone's screwed out into the street.
They're out on the Santa Girls.
It's 4 a.m. and there's no cabs. You know, that's what it looks like to me.
And no one's wearing a jacket in Melbourne midwinter. Yeah, and everyone's got the sort of goose flesh on their arms because they're and blotchy because they're all fucking freezing. You reminded me something just then, actually, Karen, about that situation with Renee and Kieran, which I forgot to say. One other thing that Tim did that I really hated was when he was going off at Naranga saying, I just don't think you should be talking to your mates, missus, full stop. And he was getting all angsty about Renee and Naranga being friends. Kieran has just hooked up with or almost hooked up with Cass and hooked up with Jess, both of whom are friends of Renee's. So
and
it's
he hooked up with Abby. So he's just hooked up with three women in the last like 3 days.
Yeah. No, but I mean specifically who are friends.
About
friends.
Yeah.
So if you're gonna get all on your stupid tall dumb hair man horse about the issue is not, you know, that you're with this person, it's because it's your friend's ex, then turn around and tell Kieran to fuck off, Tim.
But that's toxic masculinity. That's like bro code, you know.
Yeah, exactly.
That he's we don't know what Naranga's motives are or were,
of course we don't.
But the simple act of like putting your arm around a friend who's stressed out or upset and saying like, you know, I'm here with you, shouldn't be a gendered one that then gets howled down as like, you're betraying your mate, you know, like
cutting his grass.
You're cutting his grass.
Yeah.
Oh my God. But yeah, I just kept watching them just going like, you're just like meatheads.
Yeah. Can we move on from them? Because honestly, they're so exhausting and disappointing. On to someone who is not either of those things. Alicia, what do you think of her?
Well, as already offered, I think that Alicia must be a very powerful witch because she's yes. turned Gleg from like uncooked cookie dough mm-hmm. in my brain to like mm-hmm. an interesting, intriguing adult human male.
Yeah. She's taken a piece of white bread and she's made it into fairy bread.
Yeah, she's sprinkled her hundreds and thousands on it and we're like, yeah. Oh, I never cool. noticed before, but he does seem cool. Yeah, obviously when I saw she was coming on, I got excited because I looked at her Instagram and she seems like, you know, she's a feminist and she's progressive and she's got all these great kind of social values. And I looked at it and I just thought, well, that all, straight away, you know, makes me love you.
Yeah.
But then she comes on the show and she's like funny and cool and like really good value as well. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, she's really the MVP of the series so far.
Yeah, definitely. I'm really glad that she has come along. I was really feeling worried about continuing to force you to watch this season. And then when they announced that it was going to be four nights next week, I thought, oh God, one of the selling points of me convincing Karen that this was not going to be such a big deal was that I think it's only on three times a week. It's not like Maths that's on five times a week.
Yeah, because I said, is it going to be on as much as Maths? Because that nearly fucking broke me.
And I said, no.
You were like, and then it was only
they sort of pulled a bit of a bait and switch on us because the first couple of weeks there were only two episodes and I was thinking, this is bloody money for the Gem. This is bloody no money for Gem, you know, because it's for free. Now, Jamie, I'm worried. I have concern for Jamie.
He's clearly got like self-esteem, you know, he's got some, like he's got his own kind of complexes that he's working through.
Yeah.
And his relationship building and his social communication and stuff like that is like, I mean, it's
not
really
strong.
Yeah. And he obviously shouldn't be there.
Yes, he shouldn't be in a situation, I think, where people are judging on first impressions, are judging on edited footage on TV. I think a situation where people are stuck in a place with each other in high pressure emotional situations, because he does seem to have issues with social cues. And yeah. he does seem to have issues with appropriate response, social response. And that freaks
that
people
seems
out.
Like that was really obvious from his first appearance in The Bachelor
right
Mansion.
From the beginning.
Yeah. So therefore, for him to be cast on another show seems like a real failure in like the duty of care and due diligence of the show, because clearly he's been cast for maximum, you know, controversy and carnage and damage, yeah. you know what I mean? Like maximum mm-hmm. ratings and wanting people wanting to tune in to see him kind of
be
fail
weird.
Spectacularly or be weird yeah. in some way. And it's like, you know, the fact that we then ended up seeing the amount of distress that he was in
yeah.
was clearly, you know, gold for the show.
Yeah.
And used to great effect yeah. as a kind of like plot twist. You thought Tim was leaving. It's actually Jamie leaving. And then also showing the rest of the cast
just laughing at him and laughing at his distress. That was yeah. another Schadenfreude bit that I just felt sick about. I think, again, it was Cass. I think it was Mary as
yeah,
well.
Yeah, they showed Cass and Mary doing bits to camera about
just
how
laughing
funny it was.
About how crazy, how he lost it and he had to walk 2 kilometers up the driveway. And the fact that the
but they also showed that. Jake and Eleanor, you know, they also showed people just sitting in the bar also just in situ
lolling.
Laughing about it as yeah. well with the producers. And it's like, okay, you could have pretty easily predicted that something along these lines was going to happen in terms yeah. of this guy was going to have a bit of a sort of public meltdown.
Yeah.
And that the fact that it happened the way it did, you know, he obviously came out of his over-identification with Tim.
Yeah.
And they made hay out of that in all of the edits so far. And it's been a kind of, you know, plot line for entertainment so far that Jamie has really strong feelings for Tim that are not reciprocated, you know, platonic friendship feelings, but that he over-identifies in him. So that being set up for funsies and for entertainment was deeply uncomfortable and offensive to me.
I wasn't enjoying it.
But the thing is, I guess a lot of people probably were.
Yeah, yep. And maybe and that's where with we have to kind of go, well, maybe with a bird's eye view, in some ways the editing actually makes it clearer, I mean for me at least, that this is a person who shouldn't probably be in this situation for everyone's sake, especially his own, and is really struggling socially. And that maybe when people are in it, it's less clear and he just seems like a big weird weirdo who's obsessed with Tim.
Yeah, and there's all these kind of, you know, gendered complexities to it as well, in that he's this really big, strong, powerful guy. And so women from girlhood are on the alert for the possibility of danger from guys who are really big and strong and could overpower them, and who behave in like unpredictable or weird ways or give them a kind of sus vibe. And so on the one hand, you have to kind of be sympathetic or maybe empathetic towards the women who are kind of like just giving him a wide berth, because they're like, I don't know about this energy and he's a really big guy and I – you know, he intimidates me.
And I'm worried that if I interact with him at all, he's going to come on at 100, because that's what he's done with Tim.
And every woman listening to this will know that feeling
of like, not wanting to engage.
Yeah, whether it's like a guy trying to buy you a drink in a nightclub, or whether it's a guy that you've been seeing for, you know, a few weeks who is coming on way too strong and you're just thinking, how do I get out of this? You know.
Yeah, or a guy in the supermarket today who like randomly started commenting on my jacket and my mask, and I was like, what about me buying Sour Patch Kids is making you think that I want to have this conversation?
Yeah, and women are trained not to go, I don't want to talk to you, or fuck off, or, you know, we're trained to go like, okay, thanks.
Because if you don't, you know that very good chance of the next thing happening is an escalation.
Yeah, the gendered stuff really struck me, because I was like, okay, if the girls are avoiding him, there's a reason for that.
Yeah.
And if the men are avoiding him, then I feel like they're just being cunty.
Yeah. Or there's a sort of homophobic element almost to it as well, of not wanting this guy to be obsessed with me.
Yeah.
Yeah, I didn't feel a massive amount of that maybe from Tim. I felt more exasperation and exhaustion spilling out into what seems to maybe be a proclivity towards being a bit of a mean bully. But, yeah, I definitely think that is part of the reason that men might react like that, straight men might react like that.
It's like kind of one of the fault lines of Australian masculinity is that there's a way for men to be close.
Yeah.
There's a way for men to express their love for each other, and it's not saying I love you.
Yeah.
I really think Tim is so amazing. He's sexy. He's cool. He's all this stuff that Jamie says.
Breaking down into tears, thinking that you're gonna leave and begging you not to
go. And it's played for laughs. How Australian masculinity allows men to be close is if they're drunk, they're allowed to like drape their arms around each other and say, I love you, man. You know, if they're playing footy, they're allowed to smack each other's asses and cuddle if they lose or win. In this situation, you know, Kieran crying and Glegg just being like, okay. Like, he's following the codes of Australian masculinity. Mm. He's not allowed to go, oh, come here, mate, bring it in, the way that any woman would.
Yeah.
So I feel like it plays out in a lot of really interesting ways.
Mm. It does make me remember why I have always liked Kieran, and until probably this, the whole thing, Tim, in that I feel like they do circumvent that a bit, or do subvert that a bit. That I love you, man, like cuddling and saying how great they look, that, you know, you look so good, love this outfit, man, you know, like that does subvert that rigid masculinity. And they still have
And lots of younger guys coming through do.
Yeah, even though, yes, we've found out maybe they're not the, yeah, literal podcast saint, patron saint that we thought that he was last season, that is still there, which I do still appreciate.
It's still a really good thing about the two of them and the way that they kind of model their friendship in public. I feel like the more men in any public way show affection for one another in a platonic sense, or a romantic sense or a sexual sense, but the more men being openly affectionate, openly sympathetic, openly caring and loving and physically demonstrating that, the better. And someone like Jamie obviously is craving connection, like craving love and validation and for people to like him and love him and want to be near him. And yet when he's in these kind of opportunities to have that, he seems a bit kind of paralyzed and not able to
close the deal,
connect on the level that people are offering. Kieran and Jess, I think they're building up to get their story. Jess is obviously a really cool person.
Mm-hmm.
And so
yes, agreed.
It upset me to kind of see this edit of her just kind of having to kind of mope around behind Kieran and be really reassuring and comforting to him and just sort of, comfort him through his feelings about another woman. It's like I kind of felt like I wish that she would go, okay, I'm going to leave you to it. I'm going to go and knock back a few Mai Tais.
Yeah, and, I've got a few things to do.
Yeah, like I'll catch you on the flip side, buddy, when you got your shit sorted out. I kind of would have enjoyed that. In the same way that I didn't enjoy watching her have to kind of just like follow him around and be like a and like beg him to stay and stuff. I was like, oh, this is, you know, along with Tim and Britt, it's another kind of microcosm of the world of like cishet straight dating.
Mm-hmm.
Because it's like these amazing, cool women with these men who are like either fine or really problematic and irritating and annoying in some way, or just not as good as them.
It's true. In fact, at one point, Tim says to Britt when he was lying on her, I feel like you're too good for me. And Britt said no, but I didn't. Beloveds, activate. We've heard from a few of you recently that you're really loving the pod and it means heaps to us. So thank you for that feedback. But what you can do for us right now is we want to reach the other reality tragedies out there. So if you're listening to us on your phone, screenshot us, chuck us in your stories, tag us, pop us in your friend group messenger chat.
Tattoo us on your body.
Oh, yes, that. I was going to say pop us in your family WhatsApp.
Make those giant signs that you hang over the freeway.
Check that you're subscribed, that you've rated us 5 stars. Thank you very much. And also left us a nice fawning comment about how funny I am and how Karen's not, that she's really just here along for the ride.
You can ask us to marry you on Nearly_Beloved on Twitter, Nearly Beloved Podcast on Insta, and nearlybelovedpodcast@gmail.com.
I now pronounce this podcast finished.